for 15 to 20 million
dollars. I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM Radio. As you know, we serve Philadelphia and the entire tri-state area. I'm going to ask all of you to go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in here on 860. And if they're not on the area of our broadcast code, I encourage you to tell them to get on the internet and go to AmericanWorkersRadio.com. And there is a listen live link right on the left side of the page. Just click on that and you will be able to listen from anywhere in the world. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we had some very good broadcasts lately. My thanks first to Mark Andel. As you know him, he's the founder of the Made in America store. And Mark, you're on the front page of our October edition of the Polish American News out of Philadelphia. And Larkin Connolly is our East Coast vice president from SCORE, who's with us today as well. And the very well-known Rich Logis, who is the principal of RJL Technology Integration. And our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky. And I'm Michael Blihash, and I'm always happy to be with you. We had a good thing happen this week. We do a lot of people listening on the regular broadcast line, but more and more people are going on and listening to our broadcasts online. So Henry said to me, I think we have to increase our bandwidth. We got a notice. So that is a good sign. That means that more and more people are engaged, trying to make sure that we do things to help one another. That's what we're all about here on American Workers Radio. Last week we had another lively discussion about national issues, national leaders, and the importance for all of us to vote. And I want to remind all of you that if you have not voted in the last election or two and you would like to register to vote, there is a link on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com, a few links under the Listen Live. Go on that, register, send in your application, and that must be registered, I think, by Monday morning, postmarked by Monday, so that you'll be able to vote in the upcoming November election. Well, before I make the next introduction, I want you to note that this Friday, October the 2nd, is National Manufacturing Day. It's another effort which is highlighting manufacturing in America. And I encourage all of you to visit National Manufacturing Day to see all the good that they are doing to promote the Made in America effort. I'm going to ask Henry if he would link that site on our show front page today after the broadcast. And one of the people that I spoke to this week, her name is Pat Lee, a great lady, very involved in this movement, making sure that everything that is being done is in a positive way. And she's on her way. She would be listening, but she's on her way to another meeting this morning. But she did ask a very special person to be with us today. Now, for those of you that are on the internet, in fact, I'm going to ask our guest to go to her internet site, go to AmericanWorkersRadio.com, and on the front page, you'll see the mug shots of all the people involved with the broadcast. So you'll be able to know who you're speaking with as we conduct today's broadcast. But today, our special guest is AJ Jorgensen. She's the communications director for the Manufacturing Institute. And AJ, welcome to American Workers Radio.
Thank you for so much for having me.
Very good. And I want you to be introduced to our panel. I'm going to ask each one of them to give you a welcome. We'll start off with Mark, who is very well known to your organization through the American Made movie. Mark, welcome our guest.
Yes. How you doing, AJ? Nice to have you on our show today. And, you know, I love what you support and what you do. And I'm all about the manufacturing and skilled trades shortage and, you know, drive to increase it and make the parents and guidance counselors in schools more aware of what we need for our future. So welcome aboard.
Thanks so much.
And Rich Logis, he's out in Florida, and he's a regular panel member. He is a former writer for a New York newspaper and a man who's very well read. So, Dr. Logis.
Thanks, Michael. Good morning, everyone. AJ, thanks so much for being on. I wanted to mention I checked out a video that you were interviewed on yesterday, and you were talking about veterans coming back and getting to work.
Yes.
Am I recalling this correctly?
You are correct. For Hiring America, I did an interview about getting veterans into manufacturing, and it's a great option for them.
And another individual who's always with us is Larkin Connolly. He is the vice president of SCORE, and he is always helping new businesses to get started. Larkin, welcome our guest.
Good morning, Michael, and good morning, everybody. Mark, Rich, Henry, good morning. And AJ, welcome to the program. AWR is always look forward to having compelling and engaging guests, and I can't wait to hear what you say. You've got a great subject.
Wonderful. Thank you, Larkin. Now, AJ, I'm going to start off today by asking you, just tell us a little bit about the whole movement of Manufacturing Day.
So Manufacturing Day this year will go into its fourth year. And really, anybody that's involved in manufacturing knows that we have this skills gap. Workers and employers are really struggling to find the right skilled workers to fill the jobs that we have open. Actually, we just released a report with Deloitte earlier this year that states that by 2025, that skills gap is going to grow to 2 million open jobs. So it's a big, serious issue that everybody's dealing with. And part of that reason is the misperception of manufacturing out there. So Manufacturing Day was created, in essence, to have manufacturers open their doors and show their community and their teachers and their students and their parents the type of amazing careers that you could have in manufacturing and dispel those misperceptions.
Well said. Well said. You know, AJ and everybody listening, I want you to just take a statistic about what's happening in the state of Pennsylvania. For the record, right now, to date, we have 570,000 manufacturing jobs. And Larkin, you will know that manufacturing is the lifeblood of the economic well-being of every state, and that's no different in Pennsylvania. It generates more than $70 billion in the state of Pennsylvania annually, and from those 570,000 workers. And, of course, from those 570 jobs, we, 1,000 jobs, we're able to create millions of additional jobs. The people who do the ordering, the office workers, the distributors, all of those people, the salespeople, all of that has not been taken care of over the years. The big problem is that in the city of Philadelphia, back in 1975, we had 400,000 manufacturing jobs just alone in the city of Philadelphia. Now, we have 66 counties in Pennsylvania, and we have 570,000 jobs statewide, and that is a big problem. So we do understand exactly what the situation is. And Rich, what would you say has to be done to help move that along?
Well, I want to just mention right off the bat, based on AJ's interview yesterday that I saw on the video there, and your interview, AJ, it raised a question that I don't think a lot of people think about. We have veterans who listen to this show,
mm-hmm.
and it makes you wonder, you know, what do the vets do when they get back here? You know, the opportunities that they may have. I mean, if they're serving overseas, regardless of our opinion of the wars, we always say on this show the troops and the vets are always above that. But a veteran who's spent the last, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years in Iraq or Afghanistan, they're maybe not exactly honing their skills as they may need for the job market. But as you said in the video, you found that some of the vets overseas were doing some trade work.
Well, they're over there, and the example that I always use is you've got a veteran who's on a helicopter. He's on it 20 hours a day, whatever it might be, and he comes back. He can help fix that helicopter. He knows what he's doing. And while he might not have the certification that somebody back home might, he's got the true on-the-ground experience that manufacturers are looking for. And veterans also have, you know, the teamwork and the hard work and the ethics and those sorts of soft skills that you can't learn in a college or a school setting. You have to learn firsthand in real-world experience.
Larkin?
Yes. I was slightly on the lighter side. I was reviewing AJ's background at Mars, and I was wondering if we could spend some time offline talking about chocolate supply leadership.
Everybody wants chocolate. Everybody
wants chocolate. You know, AJ, I'm interested in your initiative for the returning vets, but I'm most interested in your skills certification. Can you dig into that a little bit and tell us what the Institute is doing about skill certification?
Absolutely. So if you go to a nurse, you know what an RN is. You automatically know what that means. In manufacturing, we've never had that baseline certifications before. There are thousands of manufacturing certifications in the U.S. alone. So I think it was 5 years ago, the Manufacturing Institute went through these thousands of certifications and found 15 that really make sense nationally for manufacturers. And what it does is you start at your baseline. So our baseline is the ACT National Career Readiness Certificate, the NCRC. And that measures things like reading, writing, math, basic skills. From there, you can graduate to a more technical certificate. So, for example, you're a welder. An American Welding Society certificate means something. And that certificate means something whether you're in North Carolina or if you're in Arizona. You have the same base set of skills based on that certificate. And so what it does is it allows manufacturers to look at a certificate as a baseline level of skills that any person walking in the door would have. We have found that manufacturers, 90% of those that are using them, find that they're valuable. Now, what it doesn't do is it doesn't give you that perfect worker who knows Caterpillar's welding, because that is company specific. But what it does do is takes that training time and cuts it in half or cuts it by 75%. From there, you go into the company specific training. So it does a variety of things. It sets an industry standard for all technical and community colleges that are training, but it also sets an expectation for the workers applying for the job. It's been a great success. We'll have issued 500,000 certifications later this year in the last few years alone.
Wow. So it's really a certification as opposed to the learning itself. I mean, do you have the different components for the certificate?
So we don't offer any certificates. We work with the M-List, which is a list of about 130 schools across the country, and you would go and train with them. Their certificate, it's actually a certification system is what it is, and it's created off of the advanced competency model. I'm getting a little wonky now, but the idea is being able to build your skill sets and have a certificate to match that skill set. You know, just as a high school diploma, and then you get your associate's degree, and then you get your bachelor's degree, et cetera. It's the same exact method, but applying it to technical skills that we need in manufacturing.
That's great. It's a great initiative. And as Michael mentioned earlier, 18 years ago, we had 400,000 manufacturing jobs in the city of Philadelphia, and I double dare you to guess how many we have now.
Yeah.
23,000.
I've got a few questions
That's
for
a huge loss for us.
Oh, I'm sorry, Larkin. Go ahead.
That's okay. Go ahead.
No, AG, now I see you tied with the American-made movie Do you know Chris Harvey? Do you know the crew?
I do, yeah.
Okay, so you've seen the movie.
I have, yeah.
Oh, okay, so you're, you know, it's funny, so you kind of know about me.
I do.
yeah, we got so much in common with, you know, the needs and the skills gap. So I own General Welding and Fabricating still and have two plants. And then I've got, now we're up to 5 Made in America stores and, you know, really growing both companies. But I've hit, you know, I hit head on the skilled trades gap because finding welders for my welding manufacturing company was a major, major blow last year. I finally got a lot of work in the oil and mining industry and needed to come up with about 20 welders. Well, I couldn't even find one.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of them, like you're talking about the gap, they can't even hold a gun yet. So I want to take these AWS, I'm a member for 25 years, but I want these guys to have some skills before I get them, and then I can fine tune them for my needs. So this past year, I tied with Alfred Tech, which I'm up in Buffalo. And Alfred Tech, I went and talked to the teachers to see kind of what they're teaching, kind of explain to them and give them a tour of what we need and get on the same track. And it worked out good. I brought 6 kids over for it's a 2-year program, and it was between the first year and second year. So 6 kids spent the summer with me with General Welding and my guys, and then they'll finish their second year. And then 5 of them want to come aboard next year, so it's an awesome start to really get into what we need and to get these guys trained. But I did find out the schools weren't totally in gear in what we need, meaning teaching more stick and not aluminum and stainless and pulse welding. So this relationship you're talking about, we got to keep continuing to make sure the businesses talk with the schools and then give these tours to the kids maybe in 8th grade or, you know, we always said 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, earlier than that 12th year in high school. So they kind of can get exposed to it earlier, and they can find out what we need. And like you said, manufacturing has changed so much. It's a lot more technical than people think. You know, it's not breaking rocks with a hammer, and it's a lot of neat stuff going on. So you support everything that we need. I mean, you're talking about 2 million people, skilled workers we're going to be short, you know, is the truth. And I just hope people, they're starting to talk about it. I think we're in the right direction. But the timing for me to get these young kids out of school might be 6 to 10 years away, so we just got to keep the pace moving.
Well, and that's one of the most common things we hear is, well, I need someone today.
Yes.
And that's true, and we know everybody needs someone today, but you're going to need someone in 5 years too. And if we don't start addressing this problem, you're not going to have anyone today or in 5 years.
Right.
We actually, one of the things we will release tomorrow is a report with the Educational Research Center of America. And what they found is 64% of students listed that personal experience was their number one factor for deciding their career path. So that's why Manufacturing Day is so critical, is get those kids in there, get them to see what's happening, and give them that experience that they're longing for to get them into manufacturing.
So you agree with these businesses like myself opening their doors. We've got a BOCES trade school system up here, and I invite kids to tour, and I invite the teachers to bring the kids in to expose them to it, because I started a program with a local school for 12th graders to come through. It's a 54-hour program. They spend 54 hours with me. They get a half a high school credit. But I found out in 12th grade, when you walk the kids through, they ask me, like, hey, that's cool. What are you doing there? If it's electrical or CAD or welding or machining. But to me, it was too late. You know, they should have been brought through at, like, 9th grade and exposed to it earlier. So you're all for the open business tours with schools.
Oh, absolutely. I think closing the skills gap is going to take a multi-prong approach, and it's going to be engaging with students directly. That's bringing them into your plants, but it's also going to the schools or offering internships or whatever it might be to really connect with the students. But you also have to connect with the parents and the teachers who are going to influence those students. And that's really just information sharing. That's telling them, you know, manufacturing actually offers great salaries, better than most, if not all, other industries, offers benefits, those sort of things that parents and teachers really worry about. And then, like you said earlier, it's connecting with the schools. It's explaining to your local community or college or whatever it might be, your high school, these are the skills we're looking for. We can help show you what the skills are if you'll teach to those skill sets so we can take your students coming out.
You know, AJ, in your work with this organization, have you ever looked back to see when they started to pull the trades and industrial arts programs out of our schools?
Oh, they've been pulling them out for decades.
That's right. See, when I say that to people, they say, I can't imagine. I remember that's a trade school and that's a trade school. I said, well, guess what? That trade school is now knocked down. There's 200 apartments on there. No kidding. Yes, and that's where the problem is. The people watched all of this happening. And what you just said is very true. An annual income for a person in manufacturing is around $65,000, which in many cases is 44% higher than in many non-manufacturing sectors.
And 90% of manufacturing jobs offer medical benefits, something that everybody today is looking for, and we've got them. You just have to apply for them.
You know, I'm pleased to say that in the state of Pennsylvania, and I want to mention that we had on our broadcast about 5 weeks ago, new state senator John Sabatina, and he is helping us to promote manufacturing in Pennsylvania. He's promoting the manufacturing proclamation and all. But we do now have a bipartisan House Manufacturing Caucus in the state of Pennsylvania, and they are doing what we have been promoting the last few years, and that is getting the young people, sit them down, talk to them, what would you like to be? What would you really like to be? Before, 25 years ago, a counselor would ask you, well, what do you think you would best like to do in the future? Today, they don't ask those questions. It's just an existence. Yesterday, I saw on one of the stations, we have a Secretary of Labor and Industry in the state of Pennsylvania, Kathy Mandarino. She was going around to different companies, talking about the skills needed, what is going to be the future of manufacturing, how many people are skilled to go into the workforce immediately, how many people do we have to produce by the year 2020. And during that particular broadcast, they announced that right now in the state of Pennsylvania, there are over 8,000 jobs in manufacturing ready to be filled tomorrow in the area of $60,000 to $65,000, but they don't have enough qualified people to fill those jobs.
Well, the problem with manufacturing, and I feel like in America, we need to also recognize that manufacturing isn't just those 8,000 jobs, because it's the multiplier effect in manufacturing is the greatest of any single sector. So you're talking about the manufacturing jobs plus all of the extra labor from other jobs that are affiliated with that sector that are just going unanswered. It's critical to our economy. And the idea that, you know, we don't make things in the U.S., we absolutely make things in the U.S. today. I mean, it's actually, taken alone, U.S. manufacturing is the 10th largest economy in the world. We need to fill those jobs in order to not only stabilize those 8,000, but to stabilize the communities that they're in.
Right. And you will see many statements put up on the internet and read by people in industry saying that the reason we left America is because we can't find enough skilled workers. So rather than kill ourselves trying to reinvent the wheel, we just hired out to other countries to manufacture the products we need.
We do know that there are numerous companies that will move to other locations, even in the U.S., when they know the community and technical colleges are working with the manufacturers. So we've seen a bunch of people move to North Carolina is a great example, because the community colleges there are really working with manufacturers to teach to the skill sets that they need. So it's a great bonus to the skill certification system I mentioned earlier.
Well, for those of you that are wondering who is this special voice today, her name is A.J. Gorgensen, and she is the communications director of the Manufacturing Institute. She's also involved with National Manufacturing Day, and I'm going to ask Henry if he'll link that up there, because it is this Friday, October the 2nd. Now, A.J., once this Manufacturing Day is over, how do you start preparing for next year?
We start on October 3rd.
That's the way I like to hear it. Boy, what do you say to that, Mark?
I like it. Yeah, you know, it's such a demand we need. And, AJ, you've done – how long have you been with the Manufacturing Institute?
I've been here with the Institute at NEM for about 4.5 years now.
And how have you seen the growth since you started?
So when we first started Manufacturing, it was 250 events, and I think now we're up to over 12, 2,091.
2,091 from 250.
So yeah. Last year alone, we recognized, I think it's 350,000 students in a single day.
And tell me about the events. When you talk about an event, you can have it any state. I see, you know, you've been in every state, even Hawaii, I think. And how do they come about? How do you start one if I wanted to start one?
So the easiest thing to do is to go to mfgday.com. And there is actually resources specifically for hosts. And there's a step-by-step guide of if you want to host an event, here's what you do, from letters to your schools to the how to get a bus, things that people probably don't think about, to how to market it to different flyers that you can put up in your plant. But really what we're doing is open your doors. If that is for a plant tour for students, that's great. If that is going out to a local school and giving a speech, that's great. If it's bringing in your local government official, that's fantastic. Whatever it is it's getting engaged in your community so that you're not just a brick building anymore. You are the real workers behind that building.
I like it. And they're growing and growing every year. Are you involved with these days? Do you go to them, or do you help manage and set up the events? Or
I have been in an event every year. Last year I was at GenMet, which is a metal fabricator in Wisconsin. They brought through, I think, about 100, 150 students, and actually they gave them what we're going to call like a flat Stanley made out of metal. And each of these students got to walk away with a giveaway prize of metal laser cut right in front of their eyes. So it was fantastic.
Yeah, that stuff, when I give a simple tour of my shop, now my shop I'm sitting in is 48,000 square foot, and we've got shears and brakes and new welding, and our motto is you dream it, we build it. So we've done even the largest sculpture in the country at the St. Louis Zoo was ours, 350,000 pounds of metal. But when you walk people through, when you let them shear, a kid shear on a shear or bend something or make something that he can take with you, it's unbelievable just watching their face. You know, and that's what's lost in the schools. They don't have the metal shops. Like when I was in high school, we had it right in our regular high school, the metal shops, the wood shops, the electronics, and they got a taste of it. You know, I always said, even if you're becoming a doctor, you should be able to, you know what a screwdriver, a hammer, and be able to fix your own doorknob, right? So it's really important to put something in their hands, so that's really good stuff.
And, you know, doing away with the trade school systems as they have over the last two decades really presents a two-pronged issue. Do we run short with skilled employees, potentially skilled employees, but at all of the pressure on our schools, and I know it's in most American, major American cities like Philadelphia, when you do away with the trade school, you assume that every other student in the building then at that point is in the college prep program, and that's what you start doing. You start preparing them for college preparatory work, and you don't offer that skill set training. Now you have a disruptive student body who doesn't, you know, 40 or 50% who are being forced to do studies that aren't relevant to what they want to do with their future. So that's where the unrest in the school comes from on the student side.
Yeah, absolutely. College education, a four-year degree is fantastic, but in this country we have made it we put out the perception that you have to have a four-year degree in order to have a successful career, and that's just not true. When you're talking about the salaries and $65,000 a year and benefits, that's a great job. That is a great career path that you can go from a machinist to a CNC programmer to an engineer. You can take a career and make it a lifelong learning experience that you can grow with.
AJ, this is Rich here. Sorry, Larkin, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Rich.
So, AJ, I have a question for you that's not a gotcha question. It's not a bait question, and if you're not really permitted to answer it due to your work, we'll understand. But here's my question. Actually, it's a two-pronged question. First is this. Do you think U.S. corporate tax rate is too high?
I don't know that I could answer that. I'm not the policy expert in that area.
Well, it's 35%. That's our corporate tax rate. It's 35%.
So I do know that it is a common complaint against from manufacturers about the tax rate, yes. And I know that at the National Association of Manufacturers, that is something that they are dealing with legislation about just about every day.
Well, let me ask you this question, AJ, second part, as a citizen, just as a citizen. Do you think, speculative question, but do you think that a potential tax holiday, maybe a temporary reduction, maybe a wipe the slate clean elimination of some of the inverted corporate taxes that are being deferred, do you think that if we were able to get, let's say we'll start with a few billion dollars of those taxes back here to the U.S., do you think that we could get manufacturing moving and propelling even more so than it has been? Do you think if we injected that money here with manufacturers, we could get some jobs get created?
So manufacturing, I was actually yesterday on an interview with Commerce Department, and what I had heard is that manufacturing is the number one source of R&D in this country. And I think 70% of all patents, they said, is also from manufacturing. So I do think that investing in manufacturing in this country is an economic boon to the U.S. When you're talking about a multiplier effect of $1.37 for every dollar spent in manufacturing, then yes, I absolutely believe that spending money in manufacturing is not only helpful but critical to stabilizing grow our economy here.
Okay, thank you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, and AJ, can you hold on a few moments? I just want to acknowledge very briefly a few of our sponsors, and they include the Polish and Slavic Federal Credit Union, the Sugar House Casino, also Polka Deli in Port Richmond, the Polish American Travel Service, Giorgio Foods, a symbol of quality since 1928, Pat's Auto Tags, the Washington Savings Bank and their president, Martin Bednarek, Yolanda Konopacka, the Scipio attorney at law, State Farm Insurance agent, Karen Janad, who handles auto, home, and life insurance, Dr. Włodzimierz Zinn and Everest Dental, and Mr. Frank Spula, national president of the PNA, wishes all of you the very best, and also best wishes and congratulations on another successful Manufacturers Day, and that is coming out from Leon Mankowski, attorney at law, from Mr. Chester Chanowski, from Serena's Auto Body Shop, from all of the staff, from Net Cost Market, and from Mr. Joseph Drobot of the PRCUA. And Michael Steinman also offers everyone the very best, as does Dr. Eva Marchak and Dominic Rostocki, attorney at law. Tomorrow we have a special broadcast beginning here at 11 a.m. We will be celebrating Polish American Heritage Month during the broadcast, and we'll have a studio filled with guests, followed by a luncheon here at the Cultural Center in historic Philadelphia. Tune in if you have the time, and if you want to stop by tomorrow at 11 at the studio, you're welcome to do that. Well, let's get back to our special guest today, AJ Jorgensen, and she is the communications director of the Manufacturing Institute, and she knows someone I know, and that is a very wonderful lady, Pat Lee.
Pat works with FMA, and they are one of the co-sponsors of Manufacturing Day.
And Pat is the best, and I want to tell you she's a very positive lady, and we'll have her on the broadcast. In fact, I think she's traveling. She may be even in air as we speak, to a destination promoting National Manufacturing Day on Friday. But AJ, I just wanted to let you know and everyone else that we have been promoting November as American-made month for the last year. And we're going to do that again this November. And I talked to Pat, and we're going to link up together to promote all of our sites and our efforts. And I encourage our listeners to go on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com, and you'll see all of the information about November as May American Made Month, and I'm encouraging you to please let everyone know about all of our efforts. AJ, I have a big question. As you speak to different people in the school systems, do you find out that they're very enthusiastic about getting students back into the trades and industrial arts programs?
So educators, the number one thing they tell us is that they want to connect more with manufacturers to hear what the skill sets that they need and hear how to connect them into the students into a career. I would say, though, that one of the issues that we have in this country is a legislative issue, and that being that community technical colleges are often graded, if you will, not if the person gets a career, but if the person finishes their degree, so if they get an associate's degree. And the issue with that is that, let's say you are in a community college for 6 months and you get a certificate and then you get a great job paying $75,000 a year, that's still a negative mark against the school. So that's something that we are working on, because there is a balance of community and technical colleges being graded versus what the actual success of a student would be.
Mm-hmm. You know, we have a college here in Philadelphia, Drexel University, and they have a co-op program where students go out for 6 months a year and 4 months a year the next year to go out and get that experience. I really think that we have to start doing that at more of our schools across the USA, because when business people tell me, Michael, I agree with everything that you people are trying to do, but I want you to know that as an employer, I can't find skilled workers in the field I'm looking for. And that makes me feel, when I hear that, that schools across America really disappointed America's young people to the point that businesses can really state that they have to go overseas to get their products made.
Well, like we were talking about earlier, I think part of it is just the perception. Because schools that we work with, they have a hard time getting students into those programs. And a lot of that is, you know, telling them this is not your grandfather's manufacturing anymore. This is high tech and 3D printing and robotics and advanced machinery. And this is, like we reiterated a bunch of times, this is great jobs with great salaries and great benefits. And it's something to be proud of. It's something that you should feel proud that you have made something and impacted someone else in this country, that these are jobs where you're building jet engines and new medicines and really impacting the United States of America.
You know, AJ, when people tell me that they're getting the products so much cheaper from overseas, I say, well, I'd like to see a side-by-side cost comparison, because you're telling me that we don't have the qualified people, it costs too much to do business in America, but I'd really like to know how much it costs you to bring that product in overseas as opposed to how much it would cost us to have it made here in the USA. And if it's a matter of a dollar or two, I think we better start to change the page and start looking at the American side of everything that we do.
Well, and that's actually, we have seen in the recent year or two that manufacturers are coming back to the U.S. for exactly what you're talking about. Transcontinental shipping is obviously very expensive. And then there's, of course, other security threats such as IP theft and those sorts of things, that making it in America reduces costs, but it also protects your product.
That's right. I mean, it's like our stores in the local communities. We started a program about 2 years ago, National Small Business Weekend. That's something else I'm going to talk with Pat about. And every first Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of the month, which is coming up this weekend, we ask people to make a special effort to go and shop local. Look at the labels. Let the people know that you're there shopping because you heard about this program. Some of the stores are offering incentives, give you a baker's dozen. If you shop at our store, if you buy two pizzas, you get a big quart of soda, whatever. They're doing things to start to promote one another. Unfortunately, for a number of years, this type of effort wasn't going on, and it became part of the problem. And that is, businesses are now facing with new ways of getting involved with each other where they should have never stopped getting involved with each other.
Absolutely. Supporting each other to build up the community and the industry as a whole.
AJ, you know, as I think the whole panel knows, and what I try to educate people and raise awareness, and I think the movie did too, absolutely, with, you know, Chris Harvey and a crew, how much effect one manufacturer, let alone many in a city or an area has. Like, we just had a manufacturer of oil and mining equipment go down because the oil industry is down. But that one manufacturer and the ripple effect or the spider web effect, a lot of people don't grab, you know, how many manufacturers and then smaller job shops and manufacturers are affected by one larger place. This one place in Buffalo just got slow, so 20 to 40 people are light on work now because of one manufacturer. And that's where at the store, just to bring you to date, too, we're up to almost 7,000 products made in our country, and we support 450 American manufacturers now. And I have 5 stores, you know, Made in America stores, and 3 websites and a distribution center now since the movie. So we've been really on the move. But trying to educate people and make them realize how many places are affected by one manufacturer and that ripple effect. You know, one product might have 20 other businesses associated with it. So buying a Made in America, how much that matters. So we're always promoting that and how much the manufacturing matters. And I'd like to bring up also, like, Wigwam Socks is, were their number one supplier out of 5,000 now, and Channel Lock Players out of PA, just awesome company, 300 employees. But the average age of the workforce is about 60 years old, give or take a year. So there's such a big problem coming up. You cannot grow this economy without increasing the skilled labor workforce. You agree with that? I mean, there's no question. We have to, you know, keep targeting this right now.
Oh, absolutely. And the multiplier effect that you're talking about in manufacturing is greater than any other industry. Because you 20 jobs in a manufacturing plant, then they're not driving to work, then they're not stopping at the fast food restaurant for lunch, and it just grows economically, and it just affects the entire economy of that.
Many, you know, one manufacturer. You could go back and just check that chain. And Larkin talks about the supply chain we got to grow. And how we do that is, you know, begging and telling people to, you know, you want more Made in America products, you want more products made here. Although a lot still are, we talk always about the electronics industry. I have nothing that takes a battery or plugs in my store. We're always joking about the toaster. Larkin's going to get a big toaster for Christmas. It might have to come off the truck with a fork truck, but we're going to get it to Larkin's house. You know, that's a problem. That's an area we can grow again. And I think by just demanding it, this radio show's done an awesome job. Our stores, we're always raising awareness. Yourself, your commitment to this project that you're on is, you know, unbelievable. I mean, we're making a change. So, you know, compliments to you.
So if I can add to that trickle down that you're talking about, another element of that, at SCORE, AJ, we're mentors to America's small business, and we help people start and grow small businesses. And the very, very first thing that we do in that process is to do a gut check to make sure that that individual is proficient in the type of business or in the skill set necessary to conduct that type of business. So I would never ask Rich Logis to start a heating and air conditioning business because he's probably struggles to turn it on and has never changed a heating filter in his life, I'm guessing. So if we don't pay attention to this lack of skills and skills training, we're not going to have the entrepreneurs, the budding entrepreneurs who have been a welder and have now decided to step away from Mark's shop and start their own welding company. They're not around. So all of a sudden, new business startups slow down too because we don't have the proficient, trained individuals who have that entrepreneurial spirit.
You ask any kid if they would have wanted to create Apple, they wanted to be Steve Jobs, and they would say yes. Then you explain, well, you know, he's a manufacturer. That's what he did. He created a new product that everybody uses day in and day out. And that's what we continuously are doing.
That's right. And you know what? It was really unfortunate, but we're working very hard to change it. Right now, we have 10,000 people retiring every day of the week, 7 days a week. It's a lot of people, 365. That's a big amount of people per year. And 80% of those people are skilled at some particular job. And within the next 10 years, as the baby boomers decide to retire and move on, we are going to have a major crisis. And that is why all of us are trying to unite forces to make sure that we get this thing back on the track it should be. We don't have enough students graduating from any levels of schools with hands-on experience. And more unfortunate, they don't have the interest in being anything other than sitting in front of the computer or doing something like that. They don't have any hands-on example in school, so they just figure that by the computer and all, that's going to be the way I'll live my life. But if they had that opportunity while in school to go to the classes, to visit the different industries, one of them, I'm sure, would shine for them and say, I want to do that.
And I'm telling you, the return of trade schools is an enormous element of the repair that we can do to our school systems across the country, and to get our students re-engaged in education and to give them a relevant education that they can use down the line, instead of force feeding all of them and telling them you're going to get a college prep degree, because if you really want to be successful, you're going to be an attorney or an accountant, or you're going to have some shingle to hang out front. And that's where we have just, and where college is for profit. And listen, colleges are big business right now. Universities are big business. Anytime you have a university that pays their president $1.5 million a year to be the president of that school, you know that that's a big, big business. And they want people in college. They want people to go to the University of Pennsylvania, not necessarily the Community College of Philadelphia. And if we're going to repair all the way down to our elementary school systems, we need to get shop back into their curriculum.
You know, one thing I'd like to bring up, AJ, I got four children, but my daughter just turned 13. She's in eighth grade. All they have in her, it's a public school, is tech class. And in tech class, last year she started in seventh grade, they just do wood products. And I always pick on, carpenters. I mean, I joke that I can't weld wood together. Metal is I'm the metal guy, right? But I wish we could get back into the schools from eighth grade to 12th grade. More that tech class isn't enough because they're not teaching the machining like I had power mechanics, it was called back then, where they could teach more. When we talk about exposure, we've got to get these kids to really get excited. Like I was a Rector's Head kid, I built Estes rockets, I was a model builder. When I talked to Moog, a huge company up here, top 100 company in the world, Moog, the problem with the new engineers is they develop what they call as a sandbox. They got a building that they want these guys coming out of college to go play and build things, go-karts, or fix their mowers, get more hands-on skills, because they've got the brains and the smarts, but they don't have that hands-on skills. So getting it back in these schools where my daughter can only take tech class, and that's threatened right now, I think before they even get out, we've got to get it back in our school. Maybe it's not wood shop, metal shop, power mechanics, and electronics, but more of a couple choices earlier on. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, so there's two things I would say to that. First of all, I hope that you're encouraging your daughter to participate.
Absolutely. she got 100 the first day. She said, thanks, Dad. She's been soldering and everything since she's been like eight. So.
Well, that's one of the other parts of that skills gap is the gender gap. So you got 25% of our labor force in manufacturing is women out of the 50% of the general workforce. So there's a big gap there that we can help fill through women. And that's really encouraging them from that young age to keep going and be interested in science and technology and math and those sorts of skills. The other thing I would say is one of the things that we'll be doing at the Institute is releasing what we're going to call the Voice Toolkit. Because what we've heard from students is listening to, and no offense to anybody on the show, but listening to somebody that's 55 years old doesn't make the impact that listening to someone that's 24 and just bought a truck and is buying a house and not living with mom and dad because they're in manufacturing is a lot more impactful. So this voice toolkit is the idea of sending young ambassadors into those schools to talk to the kids, to show them that, hey, you're going to be graduating in 3 years. Well, this is a great opportunity. Look at what I've done, and I'm only out of high school for 3 years, and I'm already buying a house.
Yeah, no, that's so awesome, because I've
– AJ,
oh, go ahead.
AJ, can you talk a little bit about your STEP program?
Yeah, absolutely. STEP is the gender – closing the gender gap. So STEP Ahead is all about recruiting, retaining, and attracting women into manufacturing. So we have done several research reports with Deloitte to find out why women aren't interested in manufacturing as much as their male counterparts, and making those changes. So sponsorship and mentorship for women is critical in manufacturing, showing them that there are other women leaders to follow. Flexible work schedules, those sorts of things that are really important to women, we have to be able to adapt in the industry to make it attractive to that other gender. And what Step Ahead is bringing women and 100 women and 30 emerging leaders, which means under 30 years old, come to D.C. In spring. They get honored on a national stage with their fellow colleagues in a room and at a gala event. And it really what it does is it makes them proud to be a woman in manufacturing. And then they go out and they tell other women, this is a great job and you should be interested in it.
Well said. Great. Well said. And I'm going to ask all of you to do this, and we're going to link this on the front of our broadcast page, AmericanWorkersRadio.com. But check out MFGday.com. That's MFGday.com. When you go on there, you'll see exactly what they're trying to do. It'll give you an entire outline of what they're doing. In fact, if you click on events, you'll see there's a link for host events, find events. It'll give you ideas. If you are a manufacturer or a school or whatever, you want to host some sort of event to start to get people together. And AJ, I want to tell you, the events have gone up in the last 3 years, unbelievable. And it's as a result of going to this site and sharing ideas. And I told that to Pat the other day, and hopefully I'll be able to talk to her in the next week or so, because we all have to do something to promote November as Made in America Month, so that more of the people that are offering proclamations and hosting events know about this type of event and will promote the efforts that we're promoting during the month of November, because that's how it's all happening.
AJ, this is Rich here. A couple things in our last few minutes here. Two things. First is, when you're talking about ambassadors, I want you to know we may have one for you. We had a guest on our show several months ago, Justin Friend from Texas, young guy in his 20s, making a six-figure income in welding. Works his you-know-what off. I did not speak with him in anticipation of your guest spot here, but I'm going to go ahead and reach out to him because I want to connect you guys.
Absolutely. Thank you.
He may be a great ambassador. Great kid, great guy. He was on our show. So I'm going to go ahead and set that up. But I have, on a lighter note, a second thing for you here. You're a Wisconsinite, right, originally?
Go, Pat, go.
Okay, so you're a cheesehead. You're a cheesehead, right?
That's
I want to make that clear. Okay, so I got a really, really important question. I'm going to put you on the spot right here.
Okay.
Down four, on the road, hostile environment. You got to put the ball in the hands of Rodgers or Favre. Who do you give it to?
Rodgers.
Wow, okay.
I was a Favre fan, and I always will be, and I'm excited for Thanksgiving when he retires the number, but, you know, Rodgers has proven himself, so.
Okay.
3-0 right now. We're 3-0.
Where are you from, Upper State Michigan?
No, I'm from right outside Milwaukee, suburb.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. I saw the Boss Snowplow, which is up in the UP. You're either a Uper or a Troll in Iron Mountain, Michigan. So we've always had fun with Green Bay and the Buffalo Bills. And Favre is my all-time fan, too, so it's pretty interesting. One thing I want to bring up, what about PTEC? Have you heard about the PTEC training system?
A little bit.
Okay, they're trying to introduce it from our BOCES, which is our, you know, after school or during school that you can go to BOCES trade school and the public school. So they're trying to get a grant to win that over, and it's basically a six-year program. So you talk to a student in ninth grade before he enters ninth grade and say, hey, we will. You're going to put 6 years in. You'll be able in the 12th grade to walk with your graduating class but not graduating, but the last 2 years you'll spend also in training, but you'll end up with an associate's degree. It's a really neat program. If you haven't heard about it, look up PTEC, and I think we've talked about it on the show, and I just was asked to be on their board. So it's great stuff they're doing too.
Yeah. Wow. Getting kids in
PTEC training
and on the job training is exactly what we need.
And it'll allow a student out of school to really end up, he puts in 6 years and you got to commit to it, but the student will actually come out with a two-year degree and be trained and ready to go.
And be debt-free. I mean, that's, you can't ask for better than that.
Yes, yeah. You're right. In fact, you know what, as I speak to many of the people, that I'm in social services, so I often talk to people, and that's all they complain about is, I got another $60,000 to pay down, and I've been just paying my regular rent and my expenses and all. It's going to take me forever. I had to slow down on the payments, sit down and negotiate. You're right. With these jobs in manufacturing, people are fulfilled. They have a great future. They pay well, and they can feel very good about what they're producing. We're promoting American-made everything possible. We're never trying to separate the world or say, only make it in America. That's not what we do. We're trying to say we'd like to get at least 50% of everything in the store where you go to shop and I go to shop. When I look at the label, it's made in America. That's the main thing. If we can accomplish that, all of our movements working together, it's going to be a great day in America.
Well said.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to our very special guest today, AJ Jorgensen, and she's the communications director of the Manufacturing Institute. AJ, I want you to know that probably in an hour or so, we will have a rebroadcast of today's show. We're going to put your photo up there too as our guest. And I want you to make sure that you get it to Pat, which she's on my list. I'll make sure she gets it. But make sure you get it to her yourself. And we're going to be looking forward to having you come on and be with us again and give us an update as to what's happening in your neck of the woods so that more and more of us can work more closely together. Guys, final remarks.
I just want to say, hey, we're entering the largest fourth quarter of the year for retail. So listeners and AJ, buy Made in America, it matters. AJ, anything you need, we'd definitely help you out any way we can with our Made in America or General Welding. So great to have you on the show today.
Dr. Larkin.
Yeah, AJ, thanks a lot. Very inspiring words, and I love your mission, and I love your vision. And I would ask you when you get a spare moment to look up SCORE, S-C-O-R-E, and see if there aren't some things that that your organization and ours could do together.
AJ, you can go right on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on any of the pictures of the panel members and see exactly what they have to offer. Rich, closing remarks.
AJ, thank you so much. I'm going to go ahead and reach out to you after the show here and get you in touch with Justin. Thank you so much for coming on. I look forward to having you on in the future as well.
Very good. And I would encourage all of you to check out our internet site a little later. We are going to be linking to National Manufacturing Day, which happens to be this Friday, October the 2nd. And once that event is over this Friday, on Saturday, they already start preparing for 2016, so please do check them out. If you want to go direct, go to mfgday.com. Until tomorrow at 11 a.m., I wish all of you the very best. Barbara and I will be here tomorrow with you. Make sure you tune in and spread the word. Guys and AJ, thank you so much.